Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. China's economy is red hot. In just 20 years, maybe 15, it could be bigger than America's, and its stock market is over the moon. Investment guru and China bull Jim Rogers says Americans should get on board the Chinese century or get left behind. But there are plenty of skeptics out there who see a Chinese bubble and investor danger. This hour, On Point, China's bull market, its booming economy, and your future. And I should say we've never ignored China here, but this year, with the Beijing Olympics coming and an economy and global influence that just keeps surging, we're going to be paying even more attention. In fact, in April, we're going to take On Point to China to broadcast for a week direct from Shanghai. It should be great. Joining us today from around the horn in Singapore is super investor and China enthusiast Jim Rogers. He made his name and fortune investing with George Soros way back in the 1970s and more. He's spent a lot of time in China since then, on his Harley on the back roads, and in China's financial centers and factories. He's out with a new book, A Bull in China, Investing Profitably in the World's Greatest Market. Jim Rogers, welcome to On Point.
Tom, I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you. There's an awful lot of fear and skepticism about the Chinese stock market right now among American investors. Where exactly do you stand here, Jim? Are you really telling, you know, little old ladies with their cash under the pillow to take it out and mail it to Shanghai?
Well, I will say, Tom, that investing, in my view, investing in China in 2008 is like investing in America in 1908 or in the UK in 1808. I think there's an enormous future there. Huge profits are going to be made by those people who do their homework and pay attention. You don't always buy at the top, obviously. There will be huge setbacks along the way. We had huge setbacks in America as we rose to power and glory. They will, too.
We're going to hear from a market skeptic a little later in this hour, but what about that huge run-up in the stock market? We'll look at your bigger themes, Jim, but that huge run-up that's sitting right in front of us. I mean, would you personally have the nerve, given the hundreds of percentage points increase in the, let's say, the Shanghai Composite Index, just for starters, that we've seen in recent years, to put your cash right into the China market right now?
Well, I do own Chinese shares. I am looking for Chinese shares. We can talk about how to do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's run up a lot in the last 2 or 3 years, but I would remind you, Tom, that the 4 years before that, it went down. So if you look back over the last 7 or 8 years, it's really not up that much. The gains are, even though the economy has been growing at staggering rates for a long, long time. Am I buying shares today? No, I'm not. But if I come across things that are cheap, I will buy them. The best way to buy Chinese shares, by the way, is to buy them outside of China. Chinese shares which trade in Hong Kong or Singapore or New York or London trade at cheaper prices, believe it or not, than they do in China. So there are still some things that people can buy, and if they're careful.
You've got some great history in China, in addition to your tips and picks and forward looker, and I want to get into that. But give us your real big picture on this, Jim. You've been watching big global trends for a long time. You've made a lot of money doing it. Very basic question here. Can China's rise be good for China and for the United States in this century, if it's the Chinese century?
Well, absolutely. There's no reason that China and the United States have to be at loggerheads. I mean, the UK and America grew and did brilliantly together for 100 years or so. So we don't have to fight with China, war with China, compete with China. We're going to compete with China because we compete with everybody. But we can certainly do things together and benefit. They have a lot of things we need. We have a lot of things they need.
And what's going to be the difference between Americans who not only watch China rise, but get involved with it at some investing level, and those who do not when it comes to their bottom line, Jim?
Well, it's the same as if those who got involved with America in 1906 and stayed with it over the next 100 years did extremely well, made lots of money, whether they were in America or outside of America. The people who understood that America was rising to great power and great glory and had a huge success or a huge future did extremely well, and none of their descendants regret it at all. And I would suggest that that's the same way it is with China, too. We think it's on the other side of the world, and it is on the other side of the world. But essentially, the Chinese are just like we are. They want the same things for their children and their families that we want. They want to get ahead. They're willing to work extremely hard. They're willing to save and invest to get ahead so that they can live the way we do.
You say they may be the world's best capitalists. What do you mean?
Well, as you know, Tom, they call themselves communists, but I will tell you that they are among the best capitalists in the world, if not the best capitalists in the world right now. There are people who tell you they are the best capitalists in the world, as we speak. They work from dawn to dusk, Tom. If you go there, you'll be astonished at how many hours people put in. They save and invest over 35% of their income now. We in America save and invest less than 2% of our income. I mean, they've learned the lessons. You know, China's had a long, long history. They've had some horrible periods in their history, but they've also had some unbelievably successful periods in their history. They're one of the few nations, and perhaps the only nation in the world, that's had recurring periods of greatness, and here they are on the rise again.
I spent a lot of time in China over the years. You've got some very colorful stories from your time there. One observation that I think might still kind of surprise Americans today is that, you know, you've watched it over the years, and you say that image of all the construction towers all over the place of China rising up, in some ways, it's already moving beyond that. They've built the huge infrastructure for what's to come. They're moving on down the road, even from those kind of boom images. Jim, take us back to your first real encounters with China, and maybe your motorcycle back encounter with China. And just remind us how far, how fast this country has come.
Well, I first went there in 1984 trying to get permission to drive a motorcycle across. I was trying to get permission to drive around the world, but to go around the world, I had to go through China. At least
you'd made a bundle of money with George Soros and others, and you were out to sort of get on your, what was it, a Harley and see the world.
Well, it was actually a BMW.
Okay.
But I was determined, my goals in life, it had always been to have as much adventure as I could, and I was determined to ride a motorcycle around the world. I thought it would be great fun, but to do that, I had to get permission to go across China and across the Soviet Union. And as you may remember, in those days, those were terrifying nations because they were very serious red communists, and everybody was terrified of them, including me. But I went off, and it was sort of a crazy request. Looking back on it, they thought it was crazy. I realized it was crazy, but I persisted and went back again in 86, and they let me ride around a bit in China in 86, and then in 88, they let me drive completely across the country because I was so persistent, this crazy American. But I will tell you, when I did that, there were essentially no roads. When I got out into western China, it was just one vast desert. I had to cross drive across sand in a serious desert. Everybody was walking around in Mao Zedong suits back in 84 and 86. It was pretty desperate, as a matter of fact. But what I noticed when I drove across in 88 was that's when I started noticing that everybody was working very hard. You know, even though they weren't making a lot of money, they were all trying to make money and save money and get ahead. And that's when I really started realizing that, hey, something's going on here.
So paint a quick picture for the booming China that any visitor sees today, Jim, just as a point of contrast.
Well, you know, as I said, if you go to Shanghai today, you see the most extraordinary skyline in the world. If you go to Beijing today, you see the most extraordinary skyline in the world, Hong Kong. I mean, those skylines, believe it or not, dwarf any skyline in America, including New York City. And it's all happened in the past 15 or 20 years. And it's continuing. It is continuing in many other cities around China, but it's also continuing in the infrastructure, whether it's highways or ports or airports. They're building everything. They're doing what you remember in the Industrial Revolution in, say, the 1830s in England. Well, England had this gigantic boom that lasted for 20 or 30 years, and they became the richest, most powerful country in the world. China is doing exactly the same thing right now. They're having one of the most incredible booms that's ever happened in the history of the world.
They've tried, the government has, and is still trying to rein in that red-hot stock market a little bit to avoid, it would be pretty unhappy to have a big bubble bursting in the same year of their coming out party with the Beijing Olympics. Are you confident that for all its regulatory and interventionist powers, the Chinese government can keep this big booming stock market on some kind of even keel?
Tom, I'm always worried when I make investments. I'm always worried about it. I've been investing long enough to know that anybody who's not worried shouldn't be investing. So, of course, I'm scared. No bubble is good for any country. The Chinese government happens to know that. They know that all bubbles end badly. They're trying to prevent a bubble developing. They've raised interest rates 5 or 6 times. They've raised reserve requirements over 10 times. They know that a bubble would be bad for China, whether it happens in 2008 or whenever it might happen, just as it was bad when we had a bubble in 2000 and 2001, just as Japan did in 1989 and 1990. They're trying to stop it. So far, they've been reasonably successful. If you went back to the end of last fall, anyway, It looked as though they may be about to have a huge bubble on their hands, and anybody watching China had to be worried. They did stop the bubble. The stock market went down 20%. It's still down about 15 or 20%. Maybe they prevented a bubble. Maybe you're going to have a market staying down for a while, maybe even declining some more.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about red hot China, its economic miracle, its blazing stock market, and what it means for Americans, maybe for you. My guest is Jim Rogers. He was co-founder with George Soros of the Quantum Fund, made a whole lot of money years back now, has gone right on investing, made a big name for himself predicting the boom in commodities that's been so marked in recent years. He's thought a lot about China, spent a lot of time there. His new book is A Bull in China, Investing Profitably in the World's Greatest Market. He joins us today from Singapore. Let's take a call from Janet in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Hi, Janet. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It seems to me your guest is taking an extremely long-run view of things, and I would probably agree with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just in Beijing in early December, and I've never heard so much grumbling in 25 years of going there about things like inflation and the emergence of a super wealthy class and general dissatisfaction. And I'm a long-time China person, so I'd like to hear your guest address that, please.
Stick with us, Janet. Jim Rogers, inflation, we just see the story out today that the Chinese cabinet is saying it's going to temporarily intervene to curb price rises in China on basic necessities like food, worried about inflationary pressure. What about China and inflation, Jim?
Well, no, they certainly have inflation. Everybody in the world has inflation. We have inflation in America, except our government lies about it. Anybody who shops knows we have inflation for just about anything. No, China has inflation. Commodity prices are going through the roof all over the world. It's for real. They said before the Chinese government has been raising interest rates, trying to cool things off. We'll see if they're successful or not. But as far as the grumbling about inflation and pollution and the rest of it, sure, it's going on. That's a sign of how China is changing. Remember, 20 years ago, you weren't allowed to grumble. 25 years ago, there was no such thing as grumbling. Now you have all the people in the world, all the people in China, voicing their opinions when they're upset about something, and the government is starting to listen. The government is going to spend hundreds of billions of dollars doing something about pollution in China because it is so bad, and therein lies a great opportunity, Tom and Janet. Somebody's going to make a fortune cleaning up China because the middle class and the lower class and the upper class are all complaining about how dirty it is.
Help China go green and maybe make some money in the process. What other sectors are you pointing to, Jim Rogers, in China? We'll talk about how to even do it if one wanted to invest, but in broad terms, where are you looking? Is all the good stuff already grabbed up here by mutual fund investors in New York and Singapore and Hong Kong and all the rest, or where's the opportunity still?
Far, 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 far from it. Just look around your office or look around your home. Everything you've got there, the Chinese want too. They want to live the same way you do. So that's the sort of lives that they're going to get as they increase their standard of living. For instance, Tom, the Chinese have not been able to travel for about 300 years for many reasons, the decline of China, the war and civil war and the communists and everything else. But now they're allowed to travel again. They're encouraged to travel, in fact. They can get passports fairly easily. They can take money out of the country. You may remember when all of a sudden the Japanese suddenly started showing up on Madison Avenue or in Paris at the Eiffel Tower or whatever. And everybody said, look at all those Japanese. Well, there are only 125 million Japanese. There are 1,300,000,000 Chinese.
So invest in Chinese tourism, Chinese airlines, Chinese, I don't know, fanny packs?
Hotels, restaurants, everything. Toll roads, the tourist attractions. When they start traveling, it's going to overwhelm many, many, many countries, just the tourist industry in many countries, and somebody's going to make a gigantic fortune servicing all these Chinese who now want to see the world after 300 years.
So there's tourism, there's help China go green. Where else would you look to invest to profit from China's advance?
Well, there's power generation. They're desperately short of energy and electricity. Many Chinese still don't have enough electricity, but they're building electricity generators as fast as they can. They're using wind power. They're using solar power. The government has budgeted, again, When the government in China attacks a problem, they spend hundreds of billions of dollars because it's such a huge country and there's so many people. So wind power is getting a huge push. Solar power is getting a huge push. They're trying to develop clean coal, natural gas, many, many ways to generate electricity and power. Those industries are going. That industry is going to boom too.
And you say water. Watch water. China has not enough water. If it doesn't figure it out, it's going to be in trouble. But if it does or tries to, another investment opportunity.
Well, let's talk about water because you were mentioning risk before, and everybody should look at all the potential risk in China, whether it's war or plagues or whatever might happen. But the thing that worries me the most about China is water. I've driven around the world a couple of times, as you mentioned, and I've seen cities, societies, and countries, in fact, which disappeared when the water disappeared. There's nothing you can do about it if the water disappears. So unless China does something about its gigantic water problem, the whole China story may be over. By the way, northern India has an even worse water problem, so this is a problem that's developing in various parts of the world. Somebody's got to solve the Chinese water problem. The Chinese government, again, knows this. They understand it. They're throwing hundreds of billions of dollars into the situation. Somebody's going to make a fortune. But if they don't solve the problem in time, Tom, then the whole China story is over.
How on earth do you solve a problem like this? 1.3 billion people, you can't just... they've been digging wells there for a long time. What, a pipeline to catch the Arctic polar cap as it melts, or what?
Well, you can do... Since they were good communists, they didn't charge for water. You know, they gave water away, and now they're going to raise prices to make people start realizing that water is not free, that it is a diminishing resource. They're doing everything they can to close up a lot of the waste of water that's been taking place. One of the places where I think they're going to get a lot of water, and they're starting to work on it, is Siberia. Siberia has gigantic amounts of water, and there's not many people up there. They're trying to figure out ways to get that water down into China where it's necessary. As you may know, Lake Baikal, which is a huge lake in Siberia, it's the largest freshwater lake in the world. It's got 20% of the world's fresh water. It's got more than all the Great Lakes put together, as a matter of fact. So they're trying to figure out ways to get that water out of Siberia where it's not needed as badly down into China where it is needed.
Wow. See it while it lasts, if China manages to stick a straw into that lake. Jim Rogers in Singapore, please stand by for a moment. The new book is A Bull in China. I want to get some perspective directly from Shanghai. We're joined right now from Shanghai by Jonathan Wetzel. He's director. Let me be sure I've got all this right here. Jonathan Wetzel, director at McKinsey & Company's Greater China Office, head of McKinsey's corporate finance practice in China. He's a bona fide China hand out of USC years ago, 20-plus years experience advising on China, and a lot of skepticism about Chinese stocks these days. His latest book is Operation China, From Strategy to Execution. Jonathan, in Shanghai, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
So you've got Americans who I'm sure are all ears when somebody like Jim Rogers speaks up. He's made a lot of money investing over the years. Everybody can see the boom in China's economy in recent decades. Do you see it as a good target for American investors, Jonathan?
Well, I think I definitely do. In fact, it's hard to argue that China hasn't been a target for investors for quite some time. In fact, it's hard to find a major company in the world that actually isn't in China at this point already, which is really where the challenge comes in. Now that everybody's here, who's going to win? It's just a much more competitive place than it was 5-10 years ago now, as China has materialized as such an important part of the world economy.
Jim Rogers says it may be far away, but its impact is close, and the opportunity should be seen that way. You've got millions of Americans, you know, nursing along their 401k savings now and trying to do the best thing, the right thing by them. Is this a game that individual Americans can play in, can profit from, Jonathan, or is it too, you know, blown up too high? Is it only for a game for pros now?
Well, I think that I can't comment as an investment professional, but as someone being in the market here in China primarily, and from that perspective, I just say that what's challenging about China at this point is the fact that it is so competitive that really figuring out who is executing better is the real challenge.
But by that you mean which Chinese corporation may be delivering most effectively?
Yeah, because I think it's either which Chinese company or, for that matter, which Western company that's acting in China, because you can also play the China game that way, is also winning. So who's actually got what it takes on the ground to win, which is increasingly the issue. It's no longer about who's got the big, beautiful strategic concept. It's about who actually can make it happen. And that requires some sort of on-the-ground knowledge about what's going on.
Jim Rogers, describe for us, for American investors or potential investors who are listening here, not necessarily big boys or girls on Wall Street, but just want to get a piece of China, as you recommend, how does one, a halfway savvy investor but not a pro, how does one go about doing that, Jim?
Well, the way I suggest that anybody invests is to stick with what you know. Everybody listening to the show knows a lot about something, whether it's tourism or fashion or cars or something. Start with the industries you know about and then expand your knowledge. Do some more homework and try to figure out what Jonathan is talking about. Who's going to make the big money in China? If you know a lot about the car industry, you probably can figure it out better than I can, that's for sure. And then do your homework and make your decisions. Jonathan makes a good point, you know, that not everybody's going to survive in China. And remember, 100 years ago in America, there were several hundred automobile companies. Now there are only three. We've had several hundred airlines in America over the years. Now there are not so many. So you figure out which ones are going to win, and you're going to make an absolute fortune. And those who know and invest in what they know about are much more likely to make a fortune than I am.
So how would one actually do that? I mean, Americans may look at putting their money into some kind of a China mutual fund or an index fund, but can a moderately sophisticated investor, or even just a kind of an average investor, have a hope of surveying China's, let's just say, airlines or any other category of company and come to a sensible decision about whether or not it's a good investment now, Jim?
Well, I assure you, the people who know the airline industry know a lot more about the Chinese airlines than you and I do, that's for sure. They see the planes, they know the pilots, they know the records, they know lots of things about it. They will be able to figure out which airlines have a good strategy and which can execute. Back to what Jonathan was talking about, who's going to execute? That's the important part. And if you're in an industry, most insiders in the negative sense, but just people who are in an industry, know what's going on. They know which of their competitors are doing a good job, which are doing a bad job, which ones are making inroads into the American market or the international market, who's got the good planes, who's got the bad planes. These are things which will help determine which companies are going to execute well and which ones are going to execute badly.
And how does it work, Jim? Can I just call up my broker and say, I want to put, you know, I want 5,000 shares of, I don't know, East China Airlines, West China Airlines? How's it work?
Well, pretty much that way these days. You mentioned China Eastern. China Eastern is listed in Western markets, and you can call up any broker, and he'll buy it for you if you've done your homework. He'll buy it for you either way, whether you've done your homework or not. And if he can't buy it, get yourself another broker, because it's very, very easy to do it these days. It's as easy to buy many Chinese stocks as it is to buy Japanese stocks, say, or English stocks or German stocks. We all know what Volkswagen is. We all know what Toyota and Sony is. Well, there are many Chinese companies like that which trade in the West, and you can buy them as easily as you can buy IBM.
Let's get a call from New York City. Doug, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What do you know, Doug?
Well, I worked and lived in China for several years, and I just got back to New York. And all I can say is I'm glad to be home. I think the average listener who sees the media coverage of China in America would think it's some kind of wonderland over there, when the reality is there's so much corruption, and there's so much, I mean, the skylines he's talking about are basically falling apart. They look like cheap Buck Rogers movie sets, and the whole country is a wasteland of pollution. I don't get it. I'm not sure what his angle is, and I'm sure you can make money there, but these absolutely exaggerated claims, I think, are going to lead to the, you know, to damaging the Chinese as well as all the investors in America. This can't be good, I'm telling you. And I'm not sure where it comes from and all the hype comes from. You certainly can make money over there, but it is a disaster by any Western standard we have.
Doug, let me ask you. You're just back, and there's your impression, and we hear it. It's a dirty, cheap Buck Rogers movie set. But when you look further out, do you see China as a great success story, as many do, or not?
I see city-states developing, maybe in Shanghai and Beijing, that are kind of like, you know, semi-developed areas. But for most of Chinese, I see a continued drudgery, absolutely life of drudgery. And I'm not sure how you can develop a place that has no water, no natural resources, dirty air, endless miles of landfills, an apocalyptic scorched earth type scenario. And we're also people, we think of China as the United States as this unified state. But to be honest with you, most of the people I meet in China hate the people that live across the street from them. There's so many people, they're so diverse, and they all hate their government. Anyone you talk to privately can't stand the government. So, you know, I think a lot of people have an angle because they're making money over there, and they don't want it to end. They're so invested over there, they're so tied into the place, that they don't care about the Chinese people, really. They care more about their sense of adventure and their image of themselves as this great, you know, kind of like colonialist who goes over there and is making money and likes to be, you know, dressed in Chinese gear and...
Wow, you know, Doug, you're home and you're hopping mad, and we hear it. Hang on a second. Jonathan Wetzel, referee for us here. A golden opportunity, sun coming up on the Chinese century, or a disaster? Doug is just back and he saw a disaster.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I'm sticking with my feet solidly in Shanghai because I'm quite happy with where things are going right now. I got to say that the process is messy. I mean, there are fits and starts, but reality is that, you know, first of all, I think good to have some context on this, that we're just seeing the start of something. I mean, Shanghai and China started off as an agricultural economy, you know, basically with nothing. And we're now at the spot where Japan was maybe in the 60s or 70s. So we got another minimum 10 or 20 years to go before, you know, urbanization really gets to anywhere close to a stopping point, which is the fundamental driver of China. So it's still early days, and yeah, there's a lot of mistakes, and gosh, I mean, the environment, that is certainly a challenge, but I would argue that the fact that China simply is aware of the environmental problem it has today is a great thing, because relative to where Korea or Taiwan or the United States was in a comparable period of industrialization, China's a bit further ahead, at least in knowing it has a problem. Now, how it will deal with it, we can all speculate on.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about red-hot China, its economic super boom, its blazing stock market, and what it means for Americans, maybe for you. Jim Rogers has joined us from Singapore, spent a lot of time in China. He's out with a new book, A Bull in China, Investing Profitably in the World's Greatest Market. Jonathan Wetzel is with us. He's director in McKinsey & Company's Greater China Office. 20-plus years he's been watching and advising on China. Let's get a call from Williamsburg, Virginia. And Matt, you're on the air with Jim Rogers and Jonathan Wetzel.
Hello. Hi, Tom. Hello, everyone. I had just tuned in recently. I missed the beginning of the show, and I'm sorry for that. But I'd heard a caller call in just talking about how terrible his experience was and has been over in China.
Doug in New York, he says, it's a disaster.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And everyone's entitled to their own perspective, and I'm not sure what he's done over there, where he's been. But I can tell you, just very quickly, I'm the president of a family-owned and operated company out of Virginia. We've spent almost 20 years doing business over in China and been on the ground there many, many times in many different places.
Can you describe the business in a nutshell, Matt? What do you do in China?
We import seafood for from all over the world for U.S. distribution, frozen seafood.
Those dirty, tainted shrimp the FDA was talking about 6 months ago, that must have been a bad patch for you.
Well, that has been a very challenging time in politics and the media, and that would be a wonderful topic for another show, and I hope you do that.
Okay, but you don't see a disaster with all those, you know, we heard about pollution-choked fish farms and all the rest. It still looks good to you?
No, I've actually been to fish farms all over China and all over the world, and I would never suggest that all things are perfect over in China. It's a very large country, and they are developing in different paces in different areas, but they're doing business all over the world, including into the EU and Australia and the United States, some of the highest standards in the world. And can one find a problem in China? Absolutely. The same way one can find a problem with meat or lettuce or other things we found in the United States.
Right.
I didn't mean to get off and talk about food so much. I just wanted to provide my perspective as someone who has been on the ground over there quite a bit, and it's pretty remarkable every literally 3 or 4 months that the pace of change you will see, how modern certain cities have become over a relatively short period of time, but in a very professional way, in a way where we will bring other Westerners over there. Often U.S. folks have never been to China, and they are absolutely stunned, and not just in Shanghai or Beijing.
And you think it's going to all work out in the end, whatever that is, Matt? Not a disaster ultimately, but they work through their supergrowth?
Disaster. I, you know, they do have challenges. They have political challenges. They have challenges bringing modernization to certain parts of the country, and they are diverse people. But I actually think if they're not isolated as a country by the U.S. or others, and if we don't buy into every ounce of the absolutely terrible rhetoric that sometimes we hear from folks who also do have their own reason for saying so, I think China will be I think they'll be a friend. And I think they'll do a fine job in the world markets and be a fine place to visit.
We heard the thumbs down. There's the thumbs up. Let's get one more call here from Chicago. Peter, you're on the air with Jim Rogers and Jonathan Wetzel.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just have a quick question for Jim. Jim, I know you're not a big fan of business school from reading your books, but I'm graduating business school in the spring. And I'm just curious to see, you know, if you were a 20-year-old guy, what would you do? At this point, would you move out to China or, you know, work for
I would go east. I'd go to China. I've moved to Singapore, which is in Asia, partly because I have a couple of kids and I want them to grow up speaking Chinese. I want them to know the opportunities that are here. Moving to China in 2008 is like moving to New York in 1908 or the UK in 1808. This is where the future is. And if I were you, I would get on the next plane and head over here.
Okay, let's say Peter's plane touches down in, I don't know, somewhere in China. Get more specific, Jim. Where do you see as a good way for young Americans looking to build careers related to China to hook in if they come east?
Well, I don't know enough about Peter, I'm afraid, but, you know, if his enthusiasm and his passions are the stock market, he could go into the stock market. If he's passionate about writing, he could become a journalist. If he's passionate about TV, he could figure out a way to get into the media. I just don't know enough about Peter. I certainly wouldn't advise him to do what I think is good because I happen to like markets, but there are a lot of people who are much better at building roads, for instance. So he's got to figure his own passions and then just go to China because there are opportunities for whatever his passions are. Or he can go to work for McKinsey and be an advisor.
Let me ask you
maybe
something.
Jonathan can give him a job.
Maybe he can. Let me ask you something very granular. Your daughter, I guess her name is Happy, is what, 3-4 years old now? You've had a Chinese nanny for her so she could grow up speaking Mandarin right from the cradle. How important is just that very basic Chinese language going to be? Do you see China becoming an English-speaking nation as it rises, or the language flow going the other way, Jim?
Well, throughout history, the countries which have the money, people, those languages become very important, whether, you know, it was French at one time, it was Spanish at one time, it's English now, of course, because America and Britain had the money. China, number of people knowing China is going to increase dramatically, if you ask me. If I'm right about the future of China, a lot more people are going to learn Chinese over the next 100 years. I think that the best skill which I can give my daughter, who's 4 and a half, is to be completely fluent in Chinese and in things Chinese.
And you say don't stop there, even if you can't fly to China, move to China. You say, you know, learn anything. Learn about Chinese medicine. Learn Tai Chi. Watch Chinese movies. I mean, is it going to take that kind of orientation for Americans to be in tune with the theme of this century, Jim.
Well, the more you know about a country that's, or a company or anything that's on the rise, the better off you're going to be, the better place you'll be to take advantage of it. So, yes, whatever you need to do to understand things about China, do so, and the more you understand, the more opportunities you're going to find. You know, I'd just like to go back to your earlier caller, Doug, who was rambling on about how bad things are. Everybody listening to this knows that 150 years ago, America was a disaster, 125 years ago. We just had a horrible civil war. We had several presidents and executives assassinated. We had riots. We had massacres in the streets. We had very few human rights. Black people couldn't vote. Women people couldn't vote. Asians couldn't own property in America. I mean, America was a disaster in many, many, many ways. You could buy and sell Congress. Well, you can still buy and sell congressmen in America. But in those days, they were very cheap. So we were a disaster if many people looked at America from abroad, which many did. But you know the rest of that story, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
We became the greatest country in the world in the 20th century. Well, in my view, China is going to be a very, very powerful and rich country in the next 100 years, despite the problems there now and despite the problems which they will have in the future.
Let's hear from Valerie in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Hi, Valerie, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, thank
Hi.
You.
Yeah.
I'm just back from 2 weeks in Beijing and Shanghai, and I work in the water field.
Water, okay.
I want to echo that China is very much aware of its water issues, and when they decide to do something, it's really something to see. In Shanghai, they're constructing an 80,000-person neighborhood called Dongtan, which is virtually off the grid in water. It's the kind of sustainable infrastructure that we would dream of having in the United States. And so what's happening is that American faculty and companies are looking to China to, you know, build the kinds of systems that no one's even talking about in the United States.
So, Valerie, you're a water pro. Jim Rogers describes the scale of challenge China faces, but you remind us the U.S. has its own challenges. And when you compare infrastructure work that you're seeing there today to American infrastructure work, what are you saying?
I'm saying it's far more advanced in their thinking, and that the European Union, Australia, Canada, they're all over this opening market. The United States is really too self-satisfied, but there are the visionaries from the U.S. that are going over to China to build what they see as much more sustainable stuff than we have here.
Wow. Watch out and don't presume too much. Valerie, thanks for that. Just back from Beijing and Shanghai. Let's get another call from Leverett, Massachusetts. Brian, you're on the air.
Hello. Nice to talk with you, Tom.
Yeah.
With reference to the 30% savings that is the average savings of the people in China and 2% in our society,
yeah.
As a university lecturer, I'm lucky if I can save that 2%. With our economy crashing. And so my question is, even though it's probably a very promising opportunity to invest in China, why aren't we concentrating our investments on U.S. companies that are manufacturing in the United States? Otherwise, aren't we just shooting ourselves in the economic foot?
Jim Rogers, what do you say? Why shouldn't Americans be putting their money into the future of this country?
You certainly can. You can buy American shares as easily as calling up your broker, picking up the telephone and doing so. But unfortunately, America is a very high-cost place to do business now with a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of problems which make it difficult to do business and compete. We have a gigantic trade deficit with the rest of the world because we're not competitive. But that does not mean that, you know, everybody listening to this show, if they have a good idea, they can go and start a company, and if they are competitive, they too can sell to China. Plenty of people are selling to China. It's not just a story of buying from China. Many countries have a trade deficit with China. China buys more from some countries than it sells to some countries. So, sure, if any of your listeners have a great idea, go and do it and build a factory in America, wherever you want to build a factory. You can compete. There are plenty of people selling to China.
But that's got a little bit of and good luck to you feeling about it. Jonathan Wetzel, when you, I don't know, when you're at the bar at the end of the day in Shanghai with your business buddies, do you look back at the States, the USA, and shake your head and say, you know, how on earth is it ever going to compete? How on earth is it going to survive this Chinese century? Or do you see, you know, Americans worry if there's growth opportunity for both here, Jonathan?
Well, I think that the two countries actually have a lot more in common than the politicians and the media like to make out. You know, in many ways, that there is complementary interests. These are, in both countries, are the world's two largest energy consumers. They're the two largest in energy investors. They're the two largest countries with environmental issues. So there's actually a whole lot more scope for cooperation than there is for competition in many ways. And besides, at this point, the relationship is so solid that it is impossible to break. It certainly would take an incredible crisis that would essentially plunge the world into a depression if the U.S.-China relationship were to break down. So this is not kind of an option to separate. We're umbilically linked at this point economically, so we really should start thinking about how we're going to work together and how we're going to make more opportunities as opposed to trying to think about how do we siphon things off.
There's already a lot of talk about recession in this country. Jim Rogers is on the record saying he thinks we're pretty much already in it. We're going to talk more about that on this show tomorrow. But if there is this big bubble in China, if the Chinese government can't kind of manage it down softly, Jonathan, I'm reading here financial people saying it's a bubble and it will end in tears. And, it's a bigger bubble than we had in the U.S. a handful of years ago. If it gets nasty financially in China, how does that sort itself out internally and in its relations with the United States?
Well, as you were saying earlier, that the Chinese government is well aware of the macroeconomic problems that it's got and takes a fairly aggressive approach to raising interest rates and in a gradual way moving the exchange rate up. And by the end of this year, we'll see continued movement in that direction. Arguably, the thing about China is that we've got $2 trillion in the bank. It's really hard to have a crisis. The issue is much more potentially around external balances and what the impact of that money moving around in the world market might be, which I'm not personally qualified to talk about. But I think the odds of a catastrophic meltdown in China in the short term are very, very low. That doesn't rule out the issue around, again, volatility at a company level, at the micro level, and companies can get caught out, and their specific industries can go through massive consolidations and driven by significant overcapacity, which can then work its way back into the U.S. in the form of lower prices and impacts on manufacturing and for that matter on services. So, there's going to be a lot of turbulence and volatility, no doubt, but I think the idea that there would be a global meltdown in the Chinese system in the short term is just pretty hard to see that.
Jim Rogers, our time grows short. Take us through some other sectors that you like in China. One struck me, agriculture. One doesn't think of China. I know they have to grow a lot of food to feed all those people, but why do you see agriculture as a growth sector in China?
Well, I'm going to address that, but just quickly to what Jonathan said about the bubble. Only 7% of Chinese own shares. So even if the stock market collapsed 50% or something, it's not going to affect most Chinese at all. They won't even know about it. Yes, those 7% might get hurt very badly, but it's not going to end the China story, even if the market goes down a lot. But to agriculture, yes, there are 1.3 billion. Under the communists, agriculture was pretty much devastated and ruined. Mao Zedong really ruined agriculture in that country. Now the Chinese government understands the problem. You had Valerie on before talking about when the Chinese start addressing a problem, and Jonathan the same thing, they put huge amounts of money and effort into it. Well, that's what they're doing in agriculture right now. They know they have a problem. They know they have to revitalize. They're giving huge incentives for people in agriculture. Your business school student before, if he really wanted an opportunity, he could go to China and become a farmer, get himself a real job. And he'd make a fortune.
Get up to his shin bone in a rice paddy. What about entertainment and media? Are we really going to be watching Chinese movies back here in the USA one day, Jim?
Well, I suspect we will. They're starting to watch Chinese. We've already started watching Chinese movies. There have been, three or four major successes in
China. Yeah, that's true.
In recent years. So it's already starting to happen. They've been watching American movies for a long time, and they've learned how to do it now, and they're starting to do it.
And on it comes, and on. So what do you say? Just spur the pony, go fast, jump in faster, Americans? Do you think the Americans are anywhere near attuned enough to what's going on there, Jim?
Well, some are. There are people like Jonathan and Valerie and people who've seen what's going on there. certainly, but most know. Very few Americans have ever been to China. Most Americans are aware something's happening in China, but they're not quite sure what it is. Part of the reason I wrote this book is try to explain what's happening there. I'm sure Jonathan's book does as well. Start learning about China. Put it on your radar screen. Don't ignore it, because they're a great opportunity. We all spend a lot of money in China. Tom, everybody listening to your show buys Chinese products. Well, we might as well make some of that money back. You know, do some homework and profit from the fact that China's booming and that we're buying things from China.
And do it soon, says Jim Rogers. The new book is A Bull in China. Jim, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jonathan Wetzel at McKinsey in Shanghai. His book is Operation China. Jonathan, we'll see you there maybe in April. Thanks for joining us today.
All right, my pleasure.
There's Rosemary Clooney with Slow Boat to China. We're looking for a speedboat. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
You're not going to take my heart. You're not going to break my heart.
Alone, I'm going to make you mine.
You'll have to stand in line.
Get you.